A podcast to honor the gods.
This better come with a sacrifice.
Deus Ex Media.
Hermes didn't seem to notice me approach. The iris message images were going so fast, I could hardly understand them. Mortal newscasts from all over the country flashed by. Scenes of Typhon's destruction, the wreckage our battle had left across Manhattan, the president doing a news conference, the mayor of New York, some army vehicles riding down the avenue of the Americas.
Welcome to Of the Eldest Gods, where we discuss Rick Riordan's role as a godly parent.
I'm Ray from Cabin 12.
And I'm Charlie from Cabin 13.
Do I say it now?
Yeah, yes. It's your turn.
Yes, you do.
And I'm Sam from Cabin 11. I have been on this podcast more times than you know, the level of do I say it now this comes from.
Sam, this is like, what, your third time on this season?
I know. Come I'm actually on. Really enjoying this book.
It's a good one. Leave the poor man alone. You always make fun of our guests. It's hard to be a guest on a podcast. Charlie.
I know.
Charles.
I just love making fun of our guests a lot, okay?
I know. But I love I know you do.
I do kind of deserve it, to be honest.
Listen, right. I was making fun of Sam for always picking Hermes chapters because he likes talking about his dad and his dad's snakes.
Mostly the snakes.
I mean,
the energy just matches the energy I aspire to have at all times. So,
you want to be both George and Martha?
Oh, yeah. Or if I'm George, someone has to be Martha. Or if, you know, there's a George around, I'll be the Martha for them.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
That's how it works.
You're looking for the Martha to your George.
Always.
That's the way it says on your dating profile.
I'm single. Hit me up.
That's what I was going to say. That's on your profile. Oh my God.
All right. With that lovely intro, are you guys ready to talk about this chapter in which Blackjack gets jacked?
Can I just say how deceiving this title is?
How do you feel about this title? Does Blackjack indeed get jacked?
Not on screen.
I have read this book 3-4 times since I first read it, you know, 10-ish years ago. And every time I come to this chapter, no matter how much I know the plot to this book, I'm like, oh yes, Blackjack gets really muscly, as if Blackjack isn't already a really powerful creature. And I'm like, yep, he's getting muscly. He's going to get the blessing from a god, you know, and then they're going to fly off really fast.
Yeah, yeah. Wait. Blackjack gets fucking swole. Blackjack hits the gym.
Y'all. Okay, so I just need to tell y'all and the listeners, I'm in my Little Pony era once again. I'm rewatching the show because it gives me dopamine. But there's literally a fucking character who is a Pegasus who is fucking jacked as shit.
You know,
and that's who I'm imagining.
Good. I was about to say, that is part of what I imagine when I think of Blackjack in my head.
Like, literally, that's what one of the characters is. I'm just like, okay, so just make him all black, and then it's the same. It's the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this chapter is. Blackjack gets fucking jacked. He gets swole.
Yeah.
So, yes, I agree, Sam. This, particularly because the jacking does not happen on screen. It's like, what are we even talking about here?
Third to last sentence, and I'm like, also it's such a New York thing to go, oh, he got jacked instead of like horse jacked or car jacked or anyway.
I wonder if we'll feel the same when we get to the next chapter, but I feel like these two chapters could have been combined.
Oh, I agree.
Potentially.
Yeah.
So
you gotta split shit somewhere. I get it.
It was I found it when I was reading this the last time, it was quite infuriating to know I had so many chapters left. And I was like, there are so many more chapters than there is what are plot points. Admittedly, there's a lot of wrapping up that needs to be done. But, you know, still, there's so many things that I was like, why do we have a chapter for this?
Yeah, why do we have, like, 3 chapters after, like, we got the prizes? We got, like, the reason the series happened. So now, why are we still here? Guys, like, we defeated Kronos. we got our gods to pay their child support checks. Why are we still here?
Are you What's saying happening? You don't care about Rachel Elizabeth Dare stealing blackjack?
No, I care about it. I'm just like, this could have been one chapter. Instead of like,
this meeting could have been an email. This chapter could have been an email.
I'm not saying that Rachel's like character arc could have been an email. I'm just saying that like all the other things are less important than Rachel right now.
On the topic of Rachel, I do think she deserves more plot than Annabeth being mildly jealous of her. It's like very, you know, I definitely finished this book feeling I want more Rachel Elizabeth Dare. What I also like, I don't know, on the opposite end of the scale, I did just watch the Godzilla Kong movie that's in cinemas at the moment.
Yeah, you did. You said that.
What a fucking silly movie. What a fucking silly movie.
You said that was hilarious. The first one you'd ever seen of Godzilla, too.
Oh, yeah, nice. My first ever Godzilla movie. Like, I've studied it and talked about the movies before. We talked about, like, I've done, like, my fair share of film studies. But I got to the end, and we all turned around to each other, just with four other people. And we're like, so that's the movie over? And we're like, that's the credits? There's nothing else? None of the plot had been wrapped up whatsoever.
Oh, no.
It was just like,
makes sense to me.
The battle had finished, and we're like, yeah, we're done. And
it's a monster movie. That's all that happens, is there's a monster battle. There's no other plot.
I was like, there are so many more questions I have about the plot. Is, you know, she gonna, you know, is she gonna go back to school? Is, you know,
I hate
gonna
to do that.
To, yeah, it's just, you know, it's terrible. Are you going to collaborate with these people that you've, you know, worked with the whole movie? Or are you just going to forget that they exist again? Because why the fuck not?
Yeah. I am also really wondering how they're going to do Rachel in the show. Like, I hope it goes well when we get to Rachel in the TV show. Y'all, okay. Can we not do the, like, jealousy plot? Like, the way it is the book. As much as I enjoy the banter, we don't need a jealousy plot.
Charlie, the real question is, what if they don't cast a ginger? Will you riot in the streets?
Okay, I feel like Rick would riot in the streets because he literally made her name Red. So,
it's
like,
true, but... Okay, no...
What if they did the thing that they've been doing with all the DC characters, where all of the gingers get cast as black actors? Have you noticed that?
That is, okay, because that's a thing, because people with red hair were a legit minority group in the past, and it was like a whole thing. Like, sorry, you're not as discriminated against anymore, Charlie, but...
I'm still white, either way.
Yeah. The other thing I could say is they cast Rachel Elizabeth Dare as black. And you could still run the jealousy plot just a little bit more sensitively. I think it was a little bit heavy-handed in this book.
Yeah, it's thematically appropriate. It's just annoying because it feels like not intelligently writing girls and just kind of relying on tropes.
The other thing I could see is it be spun into some sort of like distrust, where like Annabeth is like so worried about the spy, you know, actual leak out of the camp, that there's this just like absolute distrust of, you know, anyone outside coming in camp.
That's interesting.
And I kind of could believe that from show Annabeth specifically. Like, she's very standoffish and like she seems like she'd be very hard to get close to.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyways, this isn't relevant to this chapter at all. We just love talking about Rachel Elizabeth Dare.
Listen, Rachel was mentioned once in this chapter, so...
We're allowed to talk
Let's
about
go.
It.
Let's go.
Anyways, it is interesting to me. Sorry, I'm literally back on my bullshit right after trying to derail us. But everyone was like very, it's very important to the books that Annabeth be blonde, and then we kind of got over it. So if Rachel didn't have red hair, we would get over it. But also, if she's not a ginger, I think she should dye her hair red. It's important to me.
Yeah, I do think it's funny that, like, literally it's her initials.
Yeah.
So, like, if she didn't have some kind of, like, red aesthetic going on, I feel like that would be a missed opportunity, at least.
Okay, yeah, any kind of red thing going on.
Doesn't even have to be red hair. We can accept that. She always wears red. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's also important to, and it's not explicitly said in these books, but in general, you know, this is the handy part about having, you know, four younger siblings who have red hair. You do stand out as a redhead in a crowd of people. You're always the one who ends up being singled out quite often. Charlie, you probably would appreciate this. And I do feel like there is like a lot of undue attention placed on by Annabeth just because Rachel stands out a little bit more compared to other girls that Percy regularly speaks to.
Well, she's not like other girls.
Well, that too, Charlie, but like, you know, 50-50. Let's be fair to Rachel.
It's really fun being a redhead and then having all of the old ladies that ever come across you being like, oh my God, your hair is so beautiful. Is it natural? I'm just like, yeah, I have no control over this whatsoever. So thank you.
Charlie, so genetics? Back when I cashiered, I used to use like dark red hair dye, and I had people come up to me and be like, wow, your hair is so beautiful. You really can't get that kind of color out of a bottle. And I was like, oh my God, thank you.
That's hilarious.
It's very funny.
I need to see pictures of this. I need to see.
I'll see if I have any old ones. I lost my phone a while ago. It stopped turning on, so I couldn't transfer all my shit. It's very sad.
I want to see these images to know if like it was a, is like what the hair color looks like.
It didn't look ginger at all, is the thing. Okay. But I used to be blonde, like even in college, like I used to have blonde highlights. So when I dyed my hair, what would dye would be the highlights. And so it looked very natural, like no matter what color I did.
Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't used to bleach when I dyed because it used to work. Now it does not. Not fucking at all. It's really sad. Okay. Anyway, that was a complete digression. That was just for Charlie because I think it's funny.
Percy Jackson.
Okay.
Chapter, guys.
Yeah. Okay. Are you ready? Percy chats with Hermes about the ignorant masses. He tells Hermes that he gets why he was such a bad dad and that Luke probably loved him and stuff, but also that he should start being a better dad now. And Athena gives Percy a shovel talk, and then Percy's parents meet him in the lobby, and then Nico rushes in and lets us know that Rachel Jack Blackjack, and also she's in mortal danger. That's it. That's the whole chapter. It was like 6 pages.
It's literally just the process of leaving Mount Olympus, which I understand is a process in and of itself. But like, do we?
Yeah, it's not like I don't think any of this should have been in here, but maybe you're right, and it could have been connected to the next chapter. I think we're talking about it this way specifically because we record this show like this, and so we want every chapter to be like an episode of television with like enough substantial stuff for us to talk about. As a piece of book pacing, I think it's probably fine.
I don't agree in terms of the book pacing. I actually think we've had this quite high energy for a really long time. It's going to take a long time to get that energy back down. And not to spoil anything, but we've got, based on what Nico says at the end of the chapter, we've got a period of high energy. So we've got this weird dip in the middle. And to me, it's like, if you wanted this weird dip of slower pacing in the middle, flesh it out a little bit more, you know, have some more conversations, you know, turn it into a slower exit, really then kind of make it in terms of Sally and, you know, Paul have been arguing with a guy at the counter for a really long time, and there's been a disturbance that means that Percy has to go down, hence then Nico going, Rachel Elizabeth Death in mortal danger. But I don't know, like, I think that this chapter doesn't really, it does show a few things, but at the same time, I would have liked a few more like instances of the gods kind of slowly coming around to the fact that they're going to pay child support for their kids and really talk about, you know, what that means for them and how that might impact them. I definitely think, and we don't even get, spoiler alert, we don't really get to explore this whole thing of the gods must, you know, claim their children
right
very much in future, which is very frustrating as well, because you're sitting there going, we'd love to talk about this. We'd love to, you know, really explore what that looks like and how the gods feel about it, but we don't really get that opportunity to. And this is the one opportunity we do. We hear from Hermes, we hear about, you know, some of his concerns, and he kind of comes around to it. But I could definitely see someone like Eris just being absolutely fucking pissed off and really, really like resistant to, you know, doing it properly.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, Hermes ends up being kind of the spokesperson for this new event, and it'd be nice to see everybody else's reactions. questions. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Or even like a little bit of a look into like what's going through Annabeth's mind as she starts to redesign Mount Olympus as well.
Mm.
I definitely think that's something that would be great. There's a lot of like, and I get it, it, you know, show don't tell, and you know, a lot of this is kind of really non-consequential. We know that they're all going to do a good job and everything's going to work out fine, but I think we're too much in the pursuit of wrapping up the book instead of continuing world building right through into the series.
Mm. Yeah, we could always see like Annabeth on her laptop like looking at some designs that she had already had or something. Mm. Like, and be like, ooh, is this what you're thinking of doing for Olympus, huh?
Yeah. And like, you know, you could talk about Percy and how he's feeling right now. There's a lot of emotions going on, and I don't think we necessarily appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, y'all want me to talk about some myth for like a little bit?
I would love to.
I got something.
I'm very impressed.
Listen, we had like stuff like so spread out that I was able to, you know, move some things around to where they were maybe a little bit relevant, you know, when I could. Anyway, in case you missed it,
but
let's talk about apotheosis. Do you know what that is?
Only vaguely.
What do you know about
it? It took
this?
Me 3 reads of the word to kind of get my head around it, and I was like, yes, I do understand this.
Yeah, it's when someone becomes a god. It is. Yeah, it means to deify. There's also like other terms, but like the Greek term is apotheosis, like divinization, deification, whatever. It's just when someone who is not a god becomes a god.
Mm.
Ayo. And yes, this happened things. Several Greek people became gods. Did you know that? Did you know that at all?
Huh? It's almost like the gods are trying to say, look, you can become a god too.
With 6 easy steps.
6 easy steps. I was going to go one short payment of 1999.
One of the most famous examples is, in fact, Hercules.
Hercules.
What do you mean, Hercules? But yeah, I mean, like, so like Heracles, in fact, was born a demigod, contrary to the Disney movie. And then, you know, he burns away his mortal half when he's like dying. So he becomes a god.
Hmm.
Fun shit.
Good for him, I guess.
You ever just like throw yourself in your funeral pyre and then just become a god?
Because that's how it works.
That's exactly how that works. Didn't you know?
I mean, probably not for most of us, but...
Yeah, exactly. And then, hey, Ray, we read this story, Cupid and Psyche. You remember that one?
Yeah, I remember those guys.
Yeah, remember how Psyche becomes a god in the end? Because technically, that story is like kind of a metaphor for how when you give this something about like the soul and love. Yeah, it becomes like divine or something. There's a weird metaphor going on there with like, cause her name means soul and his name is love and he's love. So like when they form together, it's all divine and some weird bullshit.
It is just like an interesting part of like Greek philosophy about like how the soul operates, you know, idea of like, you know, how does it become a divine being as compared to normal body shit?
Yeah. No, seriously. I did not know about this one. There's a Hellenistic queen who was deified. Okay. So it's just there's a few different rulers who get deified. One of them is apparently Bernice II of Egypt. I didn't know about her.
Hmm.
Philip II of Macedon.
That feels like something that they would say happened. You know, like they're always like, I have the divine right of kings or whatever. It's like, of course you think you became a god.
It's very
of course you would tell people that.
I'm confused why Julius Caesar is in this thing that's about Greece. I mean, he's mentioned also in Rome, but he's also in the part about Greece.
Huh.
Okay, so it's just comparing to like how Macedonian kings were all kind of become divine. So Alexander the Great kind of became divine.
Hmm.
Oh yeah, that's right, Asclepius. That's right. Why is he only like here? He feels like an afterthought. Asclepius was also just like a demigod who became a god. He also died as well to become a god. So it's fine.
Oh, okay. That's interesting that like most of them have to like die and be reborn as gods instead of like just kind of doing it.
Weird thing. Because I want to say, yeah, so he in fact brings someone back to life.
Hmm.
Or like, yeah, he starts bringing back people back to life. Zeus gets fucking mad about it. I mean, so does Hades. And then he's like killed for it. But Apollo is like, no, we're going to make him immortal.
Just because?
So, because it's his son. It's Apollo's kid.
This is my son, because Apollo.
Yeah. Asclepius is like the god of medicine. That's his whole shtick.
Good for him, honestly.
He also has a snake on his staff. If you see the staff with one snake, that's actually the rod of Asclepius and not Hermes, because Hermes has two snakes. So...
jot that down.
Just saying.
There's a test at the end.
That'd be really funny if we had a mythology test on this podcast.
We should. I should test you guys to see how well you've been listening to me. How do you pronounce this person's name? Even Charlie doesn't know.
Yeah.
So there's no right answer.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I struggle with pronouncing normal names that should be easy. Sorry, don't ask me to print out a complicated name. And I know I do it for a living, but it doesn't mean that I'm good at it.
Yeah, well, there's lots of Greek kings who are, like, worshipped as gods. And then that continues into Rome with, like, the emperors and all of that shit. Fun stuff. Woo. That's probably never going to come back. Don't worry about it. Apotheosis. It's just when people become gods, don't become immortal. That's my takeaway.
It just sounds really sucky to be immortal. Like, I like the idea of, like, living forever. And I know that, like, ancient civilizations were kind of obsessed with it. But it really just sucks.
They try to tell you that. I feel like that's mortal propaganda. Like, I'd be down, TBH. I
you
would feel so
god?
Much. If I was immortal, I'd be so fucking relaxed.
Wait,
about everything.
You're literally the Archangel Raphael. You don't have to become a god. You're an angel. You're fine.
Anyways, read.
You will be not afraid.
17776, I think that's what it's called. It's about post-mortality Earth, where everybody is just trying to figure out how to entertain themselves once they start living for eternity, and they play really fucked up football. And
what
I think I've recommended this before, so just mentioning this, because that's what really made me feel like immortality would be attainable.
To be honest, if we all were immortal, I think it would solve a lot of, like, geopolitical issues, because the idea of people dying is like a great, like, this will teach them if we kill someone. Can't kill anyone if we're all immortal, theoretically.
Checkmate.
But are we still having kids if everyone's immortal?
In that scenario, no.
I feel like that's when you have to stop the population. Like just stop having children.
Yeah, you couldn't. I don't know what you'd do if no one can die, but you keep having kids. Like, we have to start pushing people into space, and I don't want to be the first guy.
No, that's when you bring in Thanos. I think this is when you bring in Thanos to take away half the population.
Oh, we can't let this happen. We can't become Thanos apologists. I want to kill his stupid ass.
Yes, but when everyone's immortal,
no one
we
will
can
be.
Do, we can do Greek mythology rules where, like, there's a big pit and all of the monsters that we create procreating as immortal beings.
You have to be a good member of society or else you get put in the pit.
It's like the
I'm
going to
meet you in the pit. Oh my god. Well, okay. Now I feel like we can finally talk about, like, the... Have y'all seen the Percy Becomes a God AUs online?
I have not. Mm.
Okay, so there's this, like, one very, very long post where it gets really fucking sad.
Oh no.
Also spoilery for, like, other Rick Riordan series. But, like, Percy becomes a god, and then, like, so much shit happens.
No.
It's just, like, very depressing. Because, like, all of his friends are still aging. And they're dealing with their problems. And then he's, like, emotionally stunted because of his godhood. So, it goes over, like, literally everybody dying or, like, growing old in some other way or having, like, kids. Like, even Percy at one point has demigod kids. I think his godly symbol or something for when he claims his kids becomes like a broken sword or something. Aww. It's such emo shit. Like, I recommend finding this post if possible. I found it several times on, like, Pinterest. I think it's like a Tumblr post or whatever. But
that does sound like something the people on Tumblr would do.
Yeah, it was fucking
Ray
emo.
Says,
and then
Ray doesn't regularly use Tumblr.
And then I think somebody else was just like, wow, this is a terrible emo post. I'm going to make a happier one. What would actually happen if Percy became a god? And then he like breaks all the fucking rules and is like, awesome. Anyway, what do we think Percy would even be the god of, though? Like, would he really just be a lieutenant of Poseidon or whatever? I don't think he should be in his
head sport
forever.
No, I don't think he would
be.
I definitely think that there'd be an element of like, he would like, I think he'd have a very special interest in demigods, kind of like making sure that they get like looked after. So like, I don't know, the god of the hero's journey.
To me, okay, because to me, he's still like an ocean guy. But I feel like what you do in that case is you make him the god of like an aspect of something. And so I would make Percy the god of like the tempestuous nature of the sea. And he's like the person who is supports the downtrodden in exactly kind of the way that you were saying. Like, Percy's the god of the underdog, like of when the god of the undertow, the thing that you never expected. You know?
But also, like, he becomes, like, a permanent god of Camp Half-Blood. Like,
aw. Yeah, he just is like, Mr. D, get the fuck out of here. These are my kids now.
He's like, I've adopted all of these children.
Maybe that's what he would be. Now. He'd be the adoptive, like, godly parent of unclaimed kids. Because in this in this scenario, he doesn't force the gods to claim their children. So
yeah, instead he makes that change.
He's like, this is my cabin now, and all of my kids live here, which is all the kids who you guys didn't decide to talk to because you're assholes.
Yeah. And then he's like, I'm going to help you figure out who your godly parent is. I'm going to help you figure out like what you can do, what you want to do with your life. How about that? I'm going to be your therapist.
Yeah.
But you don't have to pay me because like I'm a god. I'm immortal. I just like.
We know you just love therapy, Charlie.
Listen, it's a good thing to have. Okay. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong.
I just go and cry to my therapist on Wednesdays.
It's God, fine. I wish that were me.
I need that to be.
All right. All right. Let's talk about this chapter. So Percy goes to talk to Hermes, and the fact that he's like, Annabeth, I'll meet you at the elevator. And she's like, what? I see what's happening. Okay. I don't want to go talk to him. He's mad at me. She's like, I've been traumatized by Hermes enough today.
Yeah.
So I really want to get Sam's perspective on everything Hermes is going to say here.
Let me pull up the chapter. This is the only book in the first series that I have a physical copy of. So I have to keep bringing up an online version.
Oh.
Yeah.
Charlie and I are just flipping pages in front of our microphones.
Yeah.
That we are.
Me. Tip, tap, tip, tap. I found it very fascinating that we have this whole like unrelated conversation about the myth, as if like Hermes didn't just lose his son. And I understand grief hits people in different ways all the time, but and like realistically, he's not really upset at losing his son. He's more upset at, you know, that being the way that sparked the whole war that's happened. I have some spoiler thoughts that I'll leave for later, but yeah. I do love the whole like people from New York are a tough bunch of people, like they've been through a lot of shit. And it's like, yeah, because you put them through a lot of fucking shit.
Yeah, you have. I want to know, though, what people are going to make up, like, about why Susan B. Anthony is strangling Frederick Douglass. Like,
sometimes these things just happen. Girl power.
Like, is this a publicity stunt for, like, something going on, a new artist?
Yeah, remind me, who's the god of the mist?
The mist just happens, as far as I can tell.
We don't technically know that yet, but we will soon learn it.
Okay. I knew that there was a god, just didn't know that yet.
There is. Don't worry about it.
Because Hermes makes this weird line, which I find very fascinating, to happen at the very end of a book series, where the mist has been a main character. It's, you know, I'm the messenger of the gods. It's my job to monitor what the mortals are saying, and if necessary, help them make sense of what's happened. I'll reassure them, trust me, they'll put this down to a freak earthquake or a solar flare, anything but the truth. I'm like, Hermes, I don't think you're in charge of what people decide is going on vis-a-vis mist, but okay, you do you, boo.
I mean, he's kind of like, have we not basically said that he's kind of the god of journalism? Like,
yeah,
he's the god of like messengers. He's the god of like what people are gonna like know and talk about and say, like, as far as society. So like, I assume he has control over fake news.
It is a very cynical view, very like, oh, the ignorant masses, you know, it's yeah. kind of weird, but
kind of assumes that the mist doesn't have a role to play in this as well.
I don't know. I kind of disagree. I feel like it works for me more what he's saying, because the mist, you know, disguises something, but it can only really do so much, because sometimes shit that's weird is just weird, even if it looks like, you know, a kid having a gunfight at the beach with some old guy. You still need to figure out, like, why that was happening.
Yeah.
And people love to have rational explanations, and memory is so malleable that you're like, that if you're presented with something that makes more sense than what you saw and can like recontextualize something, you're way more likely to like adopt that into your worldview. I feel like it makes sense to me the way that he's saying this. Like, I'm going to take what the mist gave them and spin it in a way that is comforting or rational.
I just went to the Hermes Wikipedia page to see if there was any, for some reason, way to link him to, like, the mist or, like, you know, something about, like, the veil over people's eyes.
Hmm.
Somehow, I have come across this one, like, sentence where it's possible that since beginning, he's been a deity with attributes like in contact with other planes of existence, role of a mediator between the worlds of visible and invisible.
Hmm.
Like,
okay, yeah.
I mean, he's also like he's kind of the go-between to like all the different worlds anyway, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like I already said he's the messenger god, but he's also like, he can go to the underworld, he can go to Olympus, he can go to all these different places.
Yeah.
Like, I would think that he would be the link between the godly world and the human world anyway.
Mm-hmm. That makes, like, a lot of sense.
Maybe that's another reason why he would be given some like mist abilities,
yeah,
if possible.
Yeah. Anyway, we then get to the meat of the conversation, which I find very fascinating, because it's this whole conversation, and it's this conversation we've been having the whole book about the whole role of fate in the hero's journey, and how the more you know, the less prepared you can be, and how hard it is to kind of know what's going to happen and not be able to do anything, or let the journey happen itself and try not to make it worse. And we've seen people try to manipulate the prophecies they've been given, and it's backfired on them. But the whole, and I think this really neatly wraps up a lot of the reasoning behind why the gods keep such a distance from their children. It's like, you know, oftentimes they got very easy access to knowing what's going to happen in the future, knowing what's going to happen to their children or what their children love. And so by keeping that distance, they're able to glean what's going to happen in the future while also still being able to remain impartial, which I kind of understand, but also it's just a bit shitty.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that I, like, out of this entire book, this little section right here, I kind of disagree with the most, I think, because Percy kind of absolves Hermes during this section. He says, I thought you were a bad dad, but it really was that you were trying to let fate take its course and not interfere, and I see how hard that was for you. In my mind, the only thing that you can do is the best that you can do. And saying, oh, this was fated to happen, and so it's fine that you weren't there for him when he wanted you to be, that kind of hits wrong for me.
Yeah.
I understand not wanting to fight fate, and like, that is a very like ancient Greek lesson of, if you try to fight fate, then it's going to come back to bite you and like come true and in the worst way possible. We've all read Oedipus Rex, like. But to me, it's like, even if you knew this was going to happen, you should have been there for him in any way that you could have been.
Yeah. I think there's a lot that it almost feels like a band-aid solution to this part of the plot, where obviously there is an aspect of bitterness that came from Luke that led to where he ended up, that Hermes just never addressed. Hermes never went, let's stop Luke from being a bitter child and, you know, do something to or just show enough support to really show him that he is loved and he is deserving of love. Because let's be honest, in the end, what Luke was looking for was love. He was looking for someone to appreciate him and to understand where he's coming from and his struggles and really like go, yes, we see you and your thoughts and feelings are valid. And for, you know, 7 years at Camp Half-Blood, he is not ever really been told that. He looks after all these children who feel and look incredibly lost and get really upset when they're not claimed by their godly parent. And at the end of it all, he watches them kind of waste away in the Hermes cavern, not really having a purpose, while the rest of the people around him, all of his mates, all the people that, you know, have worked with him for the last 7 years, have these really clearly defined purposes and attribute things that are really, really important. Luke doesn't necessarily have that, because his attribute, as we told at the very start of the series, is he's there to look after the kids who aren't claimed. You know, he looks after Percy. And so easily, when you are doing a job like that, you can become bitter. And there is no intervention from Hermes to go to pull Luke aside and go, hey, you're doing a good job. Or, hey, here's an easy quest, you know, something that's not going
to... Well, I mean, he tried to do that and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
But like there are so many little things that Hermes could have done that, and I'm guessing he did try, but it's also very much too little too late.
I'm also just wondering, like, when exactly Hermes started to foresee, like, Luke's fate, or even, like, May's fate, necessarily, because it does seem like he was very involved when Luke was an infant. He was still with May when Luke was, like, already born for a little bit. So it's almost like maybe he was trying to intervene in their lives, and he's like, and it didn't really work, and it got worse even when I was there, so maybe I should just like not, because that'll just make things even worse for my son. So let's just like retreat away from this fully. Maybe it was a trauma response. Like, I'm not saying that anything, it's gonna absolve Hermes or anything that he was right, but I'm just like, what if this was a trauma response a little bit to like what happened with May when he was super involved
well,
in like Luke and May's lives?
I think that's what Rick is trying to get at in what he's saying here. Percy's seen all of this. He's seen what, you know, Hermes had to deal with. And I get it. Like, if you had a really traumatic experience when you tried to help someone with their fate, of course you're going to retreat. Now, I disagree in terms of the writing when it comes to let's just, like, not talk to anything. I also think, and it's not explicitly said here, but part of me has a suspicion that Zeus is at fault here slightly too. Because...
Just blame him.
Well, because he's been so cagey this whole time about, you know, making sure that we don't, you know, you don't spend too much time with your children and, you know, you don't meddle with them too much. And it's completely not true, because we find, at least in the present day experience, the gods that do actively help the demigods are really doing a positive thing. And there's plenty more examples of like gods who turn around, you know, relax their iron guard and go, well, I'm going to help you out here.
Yeah. But like, I feel like Zeus's perspective on it is also just like, no, we're gods. We need to be above them. We can't just be like helping out our kids and like being like normal parents all the time. Like, we're fucking immortal, godly beings.
Yeah.
Okay. Zeus is just like, no, we can't be good parents. I think that's the Zeus perspective on it. Is that like, I'm a bad parent and I know it.
Damn.
Listen, he also had a bad dad, so he has family trauma too.
I mean, so do we all. He's not special.
Yeah.
It's true. So Hermes, I will say his redeeming part in this conversation is that he's like, I shouldn't have gotten mad at Annabeth. Sadly, she's not here to hear this. So he can't just outright say, I'm sorry, which I do wish she could have heard. But she was also like, I don't want to get yelled at again.
Yeah.
So I don't blame her. But he was just like, yeah, I knew she would have something to do with like Luke and his fate and everything. And I thought she could maybe save him earlier, possibly.
I do feel very very empathetic, like specifically when he says that, because there's this kind of enormous powerlessness to him in saying, like, I knew I couldn't do anything for my son, but I was hoping that this little half-blood girl could, and the fact that she couldn't, like, filled me with grief and rage because, like, that was my last fucking hope, you know?
Also, what is it with, like, gods going, all my problems are going to be solved by a demigod? You know, I'm an all-powerful being, but all my problems are going to be solved by someone who isn't even, you know, 16.
The gods have the very specific rules that they have to go by. The demigods can break all of those rules. So they have way more power than the gods.
Speaking of which, the end of this conversation really redeems it all for me, because I like stories about fighting fate. And I feel like Hermes, like, kind of nihilistically gave in to fate before. But here at the very end, Hermes is saying, I know that you made us promise to be better, and we're going to try, but we're gods and we're forgetful and we don't change. And Percy says, you can change. And Hermes laughs that off and says, you think that after 3,000 years we're going to do that? And Percy says, yeah, I do. And, you know, just that really hits for me. That's so good. He's like, I expect you to be better. I'm not giving up on you as people.
Yeah. And I think it's a really, like, it really shows that the blind confidence of the demigods really does a lot for, like, the plot, but also just to kind of really make sure things are being done. And we see this all the time, you know. We know these demigods. They are going to absolutely harass the gods if they don't, like, claim their children immediately. So, you know, it's going to be one of those things that, you know, they're going to keep an eye on, and they're not going to let the gods let up on. Percy will fucking never want to, you know, he wants to prove Zeus and he wants to prove everyone wrong, and he's going to.
Yeah.
It would be such a shame if something happened to Percy. And then what I really love about this is that Hermes responds to Percy's confidence. He immediately is like, you know what? Here's where some of my kids are. Are you going to help me take care of them? And Percy says, yeah, I promise. And it means so much to me. It's really good.
To think that, like, they're going to have to spend the next 6 months chasing down every single demigod across the country to try to get them back to Camp Half-Blood, while also making Camp Half-Blood bigger and, you know, rebuilding Mount Olympus. It's a lot of work to do in, like, 6 months.
It's a lot of fucking work.
It's gonna be fun. Hey, and then Percy has to talk to one more god before he can leave Olympus. I wonder who it is.
You've always got to speak to your girlfriend's mother after you save the world, don't you?
Your future mother-in-law, maybe? Who knows? Perhaps.
She is wearing jeans and a white blouse. I just love idea of Athena in jeans for some reason.
She's the goddess of weaving. Why doesn't she wear, like, some, like, kick-ass, like, sweaters? Like, give me Athena in a cardigan.
Nice. You're so smart. Herself. Your brain's so big.
You know?
Yeah.
Listen, I have my own modern designs for what the god should look like, and I'm just like, Athena always wearing a sweater,
all knits,
because she knits, obviously. Maybe she makes her own hats too, you don't know.
I want to say it's crocheted, because that's just more complex and more show-offy.
Listen, I'm not super knowledgeable in the fabric arts. I just know that that's what she would be doing, because that's what she's the goddess of. So
you're right.
She makes her own clothes. Yeah, so Percy's just like, oh, I just want to be a regular guy, you know, whatever. She's like, so my daughter wasn't at all part of that? You sure?
And like, Percy didn't even pretend.
He's like, but there's also Grover and all my other friends. She's like,
Athena says, spare me.
Stop digging the hole.
But you know what? She's also impressed by him. She's like, you actually saved the world and saved your friends. All right, don't mess up.
I do love how then, like, and she just is, like, so disapproving of their relationship at every step of the way. And every step of the way, Annabeth and Percy are like, why would you disapprove of this? Like,
we're just chilling.
Yeah. We've gotten through all of our issues within, like, the first 2.5 books. We've got... We're like a perfect relationship, you know, just leave us alone.
Listen, if he wasn't a son of Poseidon and wasn't trying to get with her daughter, I feel like Athena would just be like, Percy's okay.
Yeah, like, I feel like she would kind of adore him. He would be like her new Odysseus, her little Blorbo.
Like, he's a trickster.
He really is. is. And yet,
he's a fucking trickster.
I just want to say this because I don't know that I've ever pointed it out in this podcast, but when in the second How to Train Your Dragon book, Hiccup and Astrid, I was immediately like, oh my god, Percy and Annabeth vibes. So like, if you're ever wondering how I feel about Percy and Annabeth, that's
the second book?
That's the I books? Meant movie. I mean, okay. I did read the book.
Okay. I was like, I'm sorry. I was like, I know there are books, there but are. I didn't know that you were into the books.
Astrid is not in How to Train Your Dragon, at least the first one.
Okay. I was like, I know there's a character that's kind of equivalent to her in the books, but not at all the same.
No, I meant to say movie, my bad.
Okay.
It's interesting. I was gonna say, yeah. Sorry, to get back to the plot.
There's no plot.
It's interesting to get back to like the Fatal Flaw stuff as well, where mm-hmm. like saving your friends and Olympus, you've managed to do it again. And that very much skepticism of like, you know, are you actually going to do good at your job?
Are you?
I wonder what it would have been to be like to be Annabeth as like she waits awkwardly at the top of the elevator for Percy to like finishing talking to her mother and her, you know, other love interests' father.
Oh my god.
Like, you could probably see it happening.
Yeah, Athena just erupting into a column of fire to, like, singe Percy's clothes.
That's the shovel talk. That's being like, I could destroy you, boy.
Yeah, so they get down to the lobby, and hey, look, who's here? It's Percy's parents.
I love that. I'm so glad to see they're freaking out because they really wanted to go up and see the boy.
Such a New York interaction.
There's a 600th floor. Is it real, Percy? He's like, yeah, it's cool. Also, like, we gotta compliment him on his sword work. I love Paul.
Oh, Paul. This actually feels like a death flag for Paul, being like looking up with a dreamy expression. I'd love to see that. Like, That feels like if you're just some guy and you get like too invested in this shit, that seems dangerous.
Paul has a death wish. You don't want it.
You don't want to know that, Paul. Just be as regular of a guy as you can.
Yeah, just be the fun English teacher who like knows sword fighting, I guess. Because you took a theater class in college. We love you.
Love that for him.
And then we find out from Nico that Blackjack is gone. Percy's just like, she took my Pegasus?
My sweet precious boy?
My boy.
My Pegasus.
Yeah, so Rachel took Blackjack. She's headed to camp. But can she get into camp? She's mortal.
Yeah, you would think. But, okay, I'm not going to say anything else. Spoilers.
Like, gonna be invited
like I could
in?
Talk about you know, anyways.
You're just gonna be allowed in for whatever reason?
For whatever reason. But Nico seems to think that it's a bad idea. He's literally like, she'll die if she tries, but she insisted. Anyways.
I wonder why
we'll have
Nico
to see next time. Anyways, I wish there was more Nico in this entire book series. I miss him and I love him.
I feel like this might be one of the last times we see Nico.
Yeah, I'll miss him dearly.
Bye-bye, Nico. I'm so sad.
My little emo boy.
My son!
He was a skater boy.
Percy's the skater boy, okay?
Yeah, Percy actually.
What's Nico do then? Rollerblade?
I just want to see some fucking emo rollerblades, like... Oh my god.
Get the skulls on the heels, hell yeah.
No, yes. He'd have a pair of Heelys.
No, wait. Nico's a Heelys boy. You're right. You're right and you should say it. Nico would love Heelys. Okay?
Yep.
I'm down for it. Hey Sam, you wanna tell people about you and where you are on the internet? Who the fuck are you?
Well, I am by day a journalist, by afternoon sleeping.
By night you're Spider-Man.
Be careful, it does happen from time to time. You can find me on Instagram and on TikTok at sam.thot.journalist. You can also find my podcast, Content and Capable, which I host, where I chat to all sorts of awesome people, including Charlie and Ray, about such a variety of topics. You can find Content and Capable wherever you get podcasts, but also we're on social media at Content the letter N Capable on Instagram. We're on Threads and Facebook as well, just search Content Capable. And yeah,
hell yeah, you got a media plug for us?
I do have a media plug, and it's one I meant to plug on a different episode I was guesting on, but We don't do media plugs over there.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
The Bits doesn't do media plugs. So you've got to listen to the episode of The Bits and you probably kind of understand where this come from. But I'm just a journalist and I love journalism. There is a new movie on Netflix called Scoop. It's about the Prince Andrew interview that BBC Newsnight did, where he talks about going to that pizza shop in Woking and how he can't sweat, if anyone remembers those memes. Anyway, this is the whole Prince Andrew, Jeffrey Epstein stuff. But it talks about how they got the interview, how, you know, they negotiated the interview and got it all ready to go. It really gives a great insight to the work that producers do. So I work as a radio producer. So if you wanted to know what I do day to day, it's kind of that, just a little bit faster and less like we're interviewing royalty. I don't think we would necessarily have royalty down where I live, but that's all good. But yeah, it's just such a really interesting movie. I love like journalism movies.
Sam, you're the king. You're the royalty.
Yeah, look, I am. We know this about me, but I've got to keep it on the down low.
I have a media plug that Ray already plugged on the pod. In the episode that I edited for the last week, was like, oh wow, Ray plugged this thing, and I have since like consumed all of that media. Wow, that never happens to me. Yeah, I'm plugging Delicious in Dungeon.
Yes, I'm so glad.
And yes, I'm gonna call it that name because I think that's so much funnier.
I already went on my rant. It's fine.
It's more important that way. I just need to know, Ray, do you ship our girls?
How could you not?
Do you ship them?
I saw the fucking bathtub scene. Are you kidding me?
Before that, we shipped them, okay? They were school buddies.
Okay.
They were roommates.
No, the interesting thing to me is that I think that Marcille is in denial that she has feelings for Fallen because Fallen ages so much more quickly than Marcille. She thought of her as like this little kid in their school days. And so now she's like she even like says this in the episode. She's like, you're always going to be my little girl. But then she's like ignoring this like new tension that's between them. Anyways, fellas, is it gay to use your blood and bones in order to do forbidden magics and resurrect your loved one?
Listen, she did forbidden magics to resurrect her quote-unquote best friend.
Using the flesh of a dragon,
And then they slept in the same bed.
And, yeah, it was fucking gay as shit.
Then they took a bath together, then they slept in the same bed. Okay, it's really fucking gay. But Sam, if you haven't already listened to the episode where Ray plugged it, it's an anime. It's Dungeons and Dragons, but if they cooked the monsters after they defeated them. Num num num.
There's all kinds of like monster and culinary science. It's great.
The fact that I was just like, oh, okay, this show is like just Dungeons and Dragons. And then I'm like, oh, it's just Dungeons and Dragons, but it's also a cooking show at the same time.
Okay.
What the fuck is happening?
They make certain choices that makes more sense. Like, I think what I mentioned before is that mimics are hermit crabs, which makes them seem more edible and delicious. Because if there's a big crab in a chest and then you cook it and it turns red and it's like got all this delicious crab meat inside. I don't know. Mm. It's just fun.
Yeah, and the fact that you can like, there's literally animals inside the animated armor, so they can even eat the animated armor. Like, bruh?
It's so good.
It's so fun and inventive. But yeah, the way that they showcase all the meals every time.
Oh my god. And then like they use this little like musical sting every time that they're showing like a meal. And then it's really funny when they use it when it's like something that's not appealing whatsoever.
Yeah.
They're like, da da da, look, it's a gross dried meat.
I love it.
Yay. So yeah, I'm like fully caught up on that show.
Anyways, it's great. Okay, I have two things that I want to plug. I'll try to be real fast. First things first, I'm legally required to tell you that we are recording this on Homestuck Day. So yeah, Merry 4/13 to all who celebrate. I've plugged Homestuck on this podcast before.
Many times.
I am deeply embarrassed and I should be embarrassed. I think Homestuck is excellent. I know. Anyways, if you like Homestuck and you never read Promstuck, you should. It's a fan comic where all of the characters are in high school and they go to prom, and it's so fucking excellent. They really get the vibes. Like, they understand. It's also one of the people who wrote Promstuck is, oh my god, I can't not pronounce her name, but the person who writes the Locked Tomb series, Gideon the Ninth and Taro the Ninth. God, what is her fucking name?
Do 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 do.
Ray runs away from the mic.
Do 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 do.
Tamsin Mur. Muir? I should look up how to pronounce that person's name. But anyways, they used to write Homestuck fanfiction, and specifically were one of the people working on Promstuck back in the day. So, like, jot that the fuck down, because that is a legacy.
That is such a legacy. I love it.
It's incredible. The second thing that I wanted to wreck real quick is the word apotheosis makes me think of the guy who didn't like musicals, which is a StarKid musical. It's so deeply fucking excellent. It's my favorite StarKid musical.
You've definitely plugged this before.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't watched it all the way through. I think I got through like the first 10, 15 minutes. I need to watch the whole thing.
You really have to, because there aren't any songs in the beginning because the apocalypse hasn't started yet. Anyways, specifically one of the lines in that musical is the apotheosis is upon us. Like, everyone's like ascending into godhood by accepting being part of the musical. It's deeply fucked up. It's a horror show. It's a comedy horror. Please watch it. It's so good. Anyways, that's all.
I'm so confused.
I can't believe you don't know about the guy who didn't like musicals. You've got to watch it.
You've told me about it, and that's all. I know
we need to do,
it exists.
I think we need to do like a StarKid like introductory session. Someone displays a PowerPoint and we put on a musical that all of us StarKid fans can agree is like shows the quintessential StarKid like elements just to educate everyone.
Okay. When you said we put on, are you saying that like we all have to like sing and act in a StarKid musical?
No.
We cast the DXM creators in a StarKid musical.
I mean,
and then we all put on one, but
it'd
from
be
our,
pretty fucking
from
fun.
But like remotely from our like locations. It's done like the TikTok musicals. Like,
oh, that would be terrible. I could definitely see us doing, I don't know, find like the shortest StarKid musical, not that there's many short ones of them, and like do a dramatic reading of it. Like, don't sing or anything, just like read the songs as like a poem.
Oh my god. I feel like that's worse.
I just need you all to know that like I always just imagine myself as Draco Malfoy in the Harry Potter musicals. I'm just like, this is my role. This is who I want to be. I am a character actor.
I was so angry that I missed. Darren Criss did like a lap of Australia last year. And by the time I remembered it was happening, all the tickets had sold out and we weren't able to go. But I was so mad that I missed out on it. Because it's like, because he had like a whole bunch of people on to do Harry Potter musical stuff.
Cool. Okay.
In other Percy Jackson news that we probably need to mention on this episode, our very dear podcast friend Erica has been cast in the musical Wicked.
Oh, indeed.
You're saying this because you can see my shirt, right?
No. I just remembered it and I was like, this is the more relevant podcast to mention it.
I told this to Ray today.
Yes, because our friend Juice is going to be able to see that show. So it's really exciting.
I was just like, hey, I know somebody who's in that. I literally slept on their floor. Like, I slept on my couch. But like, still, I know the person who's cast as Nessa Rose. Okay.
That's so awesome.
Erica's awesome.
Okay. Now, please release us from this mortal coil.
I mean, I thought I was going to make y'all gods. Do you not want that?
If we're here forever, who's going to take over our mortal lives?
Mine.
No one.
I
have no life to go to.
No, exactly. I'm good. What do we want to be gods of?
We're the gods of podcasting, obviously. Oh, okay.
Hell yeah, let's fucking do it.
Get out of my fucking cabin and let's go just like be gods, I guess. Of podcasting for
us. It's tough to be a god.
But if you get the people's nod.
Do-do-do, do-do-do. I don't know the fucking lyrics.
Oh well, we tried. Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Hello, listeners. Editing Charlie here with a patron shout-out. If y'all didn't know, our $10 and up patrons now get a shout-out on the pod. So now, I get to shout-out our lovely, god-complex-level patron, Matt. Matt is so wonderful and has been a supporter since we started the OTAG Patreon. Thank you so much for all your support, bud.
You can follow this podcast socials at Of The Eldest Gods Pod on Instagram and Tumblr, and at Of The Eldest Gods on Twitter. You can send us an iris message through oftheeldestgodspod@gmail.com. If you'd like to support us financially, join us at patreon.com/oftheeldestgods. By becoming a patron, you can join the Deus Ex Media Discord server, where you'll be able to chat with us and other listeners about episodes and anything Percy Jackson related. Our $5 patron tier also gets you access to Against All Odds, our monthly bonus show. There, we'll talk about a wide variety of topics, which usually have something to do with mythology. No promises. You can check out our merch store on Redbubble to find custom designs made by Charlie. Or if you cannot or do not want to support us financially, we'd really appreciate a rating, a review, or letting your friends and followers know how much you love the podcast. That really helps. You can find me, Ray, at HeyHeyRay, spelled R-A-Y-E, on Twitter. If you want to hear more from me, check out Barbie Movie Slap, a podcast where my co-host Ted and I discuss Barbie's cinematic universe. That podcast Twitter is at Barbie Slaps.
And you can follow me, Charlie, at GreenPixie12 on most platforms, but on Twitter I'm at GreenPixie123, which I'm totally not salty about. I also have an art Instagram at GreenPixieDraws. I sometimes do the YouTube thing on my channel, Charlie Mac. That's M-A-C-K. Our music was written by Isabel Strauss-Riggs and recorded and edited by Ian M. Riggs. You can find Izzy at Kane_I, that's I as in the body part, on Instagram and Twitter. She also currently makes video essays on the YouTube channel Kane I. Feel free to message her about making music for your project or editing your podcast.
Of the Eldest Gods is proud to be part of Deus Ex Media, which features great podcasts like Content and Capable that follows Sam as he tries to figure out what it truly means to adult.
Have you ever gotten so distracted in Stardew Valley that you forgot to sleep? Have you realized that you have a whole room in your house full of dolls? Or have you even bored your friends to sleep talking about your passion? Well then, Content Capable is the podcast for you. Join me, Sam, as I chat to people passionate about what they do, asking questions about how they fell in love with their passion, what they do, and how it interacts with their day-to-day lives. Catch the podcast every Monday as I find out what makes someone tick, all while gleaning interesting and insightful life lessons along the way. There'll be laughs, a bit of crying, a whole lot of conversations, and we learn just a little bit more about the world around us.
Of the Eldest Gods is based on the series by Rick Riordan. Right now, we are discussing Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Remember to follow us on your favorite podcatcher and meet us back here every Thursday. Before we start, here's my Homestuck shirt for Homestuck Day.
It is, in fact, Homestuck Day.
It's Homestuck Day, Sam. Ooh. It's 413. Very important to my culture.
And even more important, Is that, like, you said tomorrow, right? Tomorrow you're on Yes. Bound Before Reading?
Yes.
And you're going to be talking about Homestuck?
I still need to, like, write out an entire, like, plot summary. And I need some excerpt. Like, I'm going to be working hard tonight to get this
That's
shit.
That's my favorite Bird Before Reading episode.
I'm going to go insane. Like, for real. Like, I'm going to be talking about this tomorrow. But, like, there's an entire joke in the Homestuck fandom of the fact that you can't explain Homestuck in any kind of succinct manner. Like, it doesn't make any sense to anyone without the context. It's like kind of literally impossible.
I love it. So
I'll be doing the impossible tomorrow on Burn Before Reading.
It's like Haley trying to explain My Immortal. That's impossible to describe in one sentence. The amount of people I've like accidentally brought up My Immortal in front of and had to try to explain what the hell I'm talking about.
I mean, I feel like there's a difference between one sentence and one sitting. And I feel like Homestuck, you can't explain it in either one sentence or one sitting. Like, My Immortal, you can at least explain within a podcast.
Yeah.
I want to know how Ray's going to explain it in less than 2 hours.
I'm so excited about podcasts. Yeah.
Well, good. I'm very excited myself.
Deus Ex Media.